welcome to CigarCast, your weekly one-stop shop for all things cigar-related, including industry news, reviews, and everything in between. We're recording live from Mission Cigar and Social here in Spring Hill, Tennessee. I'm one of your hosts, Trey Debbin. I'm joined, as I am every week, by Mr. Shane Reeves.
You know, I just can't bear to put this cigar down. We're doing two, and I'm going to finish this GTO painkiller. I goofed up. I forgot I have a Rocky Patel Disciple to smoke.
Oh, yeah?
That I meant to smoke on the show when I could really evaluate it, because we were in Gatlinburg, and actually in Pigeon Forge, and we seen this little place that said smoke shop.
There you go.
And the sign did not look like this was going to be a cigar shop. I walked in there, and I was astonished how good their humidor was.
Really?
And how fairly priced. They had the Liga 10 there. It was like $40. I bought one for Derek. They had and Frank there, super nice guy. He said, you need to smoke this Rocky Patel Disciple. I said, well, listen, all the Rockies I've smoked have tasted the same recently. He said, Trust me, you're going to like this one. Right. So I think that's going to – I can't wait to try it, but I'll have to try it after I finish this GTO, because I'm not giving up this GTO for a Rocky right at this moment.
I can understand that. I'm still on my Placencia as well. I'll switch it up at the break.
Which, we had a great time. If you've never gone to Gatlinburg, folks out there, it's a destination worth visiting in Tennessee.
And I really love going this time of year. You know, it's a summer is their hot season, despite being a mountain town that does offer skiing. But, yeah, go on the off season. Go in the winter or the late fall. I think it's beautiful this time of year and just so brilliant.
To me, the mountains should be a little cool. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be sweating when I'm at the mountains. I want to be because for one, this time of year, all the leaves are gone. And yes, the fall colors are beautiful, but being able to see for miles and miles because you don't have leaves in your way, huge benefit.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I find really fun about the Smoky Mountains and the Appalachians is, yes, there's a lot of evergreen, but it's still primarily a deciduous forest, and so you do get a lot of leaf drop.
Yeah, you can see a lot further. You can, you know, your like our cabin we stay at up there has a great view of the mountain, but Mount LeConte. Is it LeConte or LeConte?
I think it's LeConte.
Yeah, Mount LeConte, which is the highest mountain there in that particular area, and it's so much nicer when there's no leaves on the trees.
Oh yeah.
And a little chilly, you know, quick outdoor smoking tip. An electric blanket is well worth it when you're doing outdoor smoking. If you're traveling and you don't want to carry a heater and all that stuff to have to fool with,
I get that.
Throw that electric blanket on you. You can lay your hands on it. It can keep them warm. You can sit there and smoke and stay perfectly warm while you do it.
So I did buy some gloves, but I have not actually gotten the opportunity to use them. I don't think they're going to work out, because the fabric that they're made out of is a lot like a hoodie. So they're not. The first time I let that cigar get a little too low, I'm going to be in trouble.
You're going to set your glove on fire.
Yeah.
Well, a cigar really won't set anything on fire. It'll just burn a hole in it.
Yeah. Well, it'll melt it, you know.
Yeah.
But no, it's the nights have been, well, A, I haven't been feeling well, so I haven't been smoking on my nightly walks with the dog. But then, like last night, it was perfectly warm enough that I didn't need gloves at all.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need gloves till you're down in the 30s, at the very least the low 40s.
For me, it's around mid-40s, because if my hands are out of my pocket smoking a cigar.
Right.
You know, yeah, I agree with you. If I'm just walking the dog, I've got my hands in my pocket, you're right. I don't need gloves until you get close to 30. But
so, our first article. St. Paul, Minnesota votes to reduce number of tobacco retailer license, bans tobacco vending machines. So what about that article stands out to you?
I thought tobacco vending machines went out with Tamagotchis.
What's a Tamagotchi?
It was a fad toy in the 90s.
Oh, okay. I mean, it has got to be the 80s since I've seen a tobacco machine, a cigarette machine.
I saw them in the 90s, you know, because... You know, Tennessee didn't issue our smoking ban until 05. I think it was 06, actually. You know, so they were around, and I think Kentucky was something like 2010. It was ridiculous. So I remember seeing them in the back of the Applebee's or whatever. But I cannot believe that they're still around.
okay, I'm okay with tobacco vending machines being gone.
So the tobacco vending machines that I've always seen, yes. Because there's no ID control. But I actually don't necessarily agree with an outright ban on tobacco vending machines, as long as you set up a way to verify IDs. Now, again, what's to take me from scanning my ID and letting my younger brother do it? Yeah, but that's true of all retail right. applications. But so in Italy, they do a lot, almost all of their tobacco sales are via vending machine. So on the outside of a pharmacy, there's the tobacco vending machine. You pick what you want, and then you scan your national medical ID, your insurance card, basically. And so you can, it only works if you're Italian. If you're a, you know, if you're a tourist, you can't. But, and then it spits them out. And so, A, it tracks who's smoking, but also there's age verification built in. Every single ID, every single driver's license in this country has a barcode on the back. Scan it. It keeps track of, you know, it provides age verification, and then let it happen.
In the age of identity theft, that seems like a huge risk to run.
Well, except that when you go to Kroger now, they scan your ID rather than keying in your age if you're buying something that's age restricted.
If you're buying. But the Kroger system is set up to protect that on a different level than I think the tobacco machine would be.
Except that you would have liability. So if your identity were to get stolen from something like that, then you would be liable. So the onus would be on the manufacturer to ensure that it's...
Well, so the long and short of this is they're wanting to reduce the number of tobacco retailer licenses from 150 to 100. And the number of tobacco product shop license will go from 25 to 15. So the 150 to 100 covers convenience stores and liquor stores, while the others cover shops that derive 90% more of their revenue from tobacco sales.
These are your...
Lounges.
Lounges, yeah.
Okay, I don't think you need to reduce the number of lounges. Because if anything, you should increase the number of lounges and decrease the number of convenience stores.
Right.
Because lounges are definitely doing a better job of keeping the kids from smoking than convenience stores. You know, how many kids got their first cigar at a lounge?
Yeah.
None,
yeah.
I mean, I can tell you this place here has been open for 2 years. And I guarantee you we've not sold a single stick to an underage person.
Yeah, no one's even tried it.
Nobody's even tried it.
Yeah.
And now the, you know, discount tobacco warehouse down the road, yeah, they've probably sold some underage sticks. The gas station down the road definitely sold some underage tobacco products.
Yeah.
So I do think they're moving. I don't mind reducing the number of retailers, but I don't think you need to reduce the number of lounges. Is that just me being cigar-centric?
I think it is. It's tough. I don't really... If the market will bear the addition of a lounge, then let the market decide. I don't think you need to restrict and say we're only going to have... You know, because what next? We're only going to allow 5 McDonald's in the entire metro area. We're only going to allow...
Hey, we could limit the number of Mexican restaurants in Spring Hill dramatically. But yes.
But if people don't want the choice... They'll take, you know, it won't be an ongoing issue.
It seems like something that's not going to really help anything. They're just kind of legislating because they're legislators.
Well, it seems to me like a lazy way of passing a ban on new businesses of a certain type, but grandfathering in the old ones.
Yeah, kind of so, keeping it from growing, I guess.
Yeah, because if I had to guess... The number of tobacco product shop licenses that are currently active is probably 14.
Right.
And so they've got this arbitrary number of 25 on the books now. And so they say, we're going to cut it back to 15 so that it's not obvious what we're doing. But essentially what it's going to do is prevent new people from opening up until someone goes out of business.
So one more piece of legislature. Ohio House overrides governor's veto on local tobacco laws. What I get from this is pertaining to flavored and menthol cigarettes, cigars. Is that what you got? What did you get out of this?
Yeah. So it's specific. Well, it's interesting because the law itself isn't about flavored and menthol, but that's what the argument is about. So what happened was there was a ban on the sale of flavored tobacco passed by the Columbus City Council in Ohio. And then around the same time, the Ohio General Assembly, the state legislature, attempted to pass a bill that would essentially restrict municipalities from passing stricter tobacco laws than what was on the books for the state. Basically saying, we've got this, don't worry about it. And it failed. And so this time around, they rolled that provision into the budget and they got it passed. But then the governor vetoed it because the governor is very anti-flavored tobacco. And see, he wants municipalities to be able to, if they decide they want something stricter, like a ban on flavored and menthol, he wants them to have the ability to do that since his own General Assembly can't get their stuff together to pass one for the state.
And, you know, I'm okay with local areas being able to pass the bans based on, because that's where your vote matters the most. When you vote in your local election, you know, Maury County a couple of years ago, we had a wheel tax put in. All of our licenses went from $17 to $130. Everybody got voted out of the council.
Right.
We cleaned house in Maury County because now it didn't get rid of the wheel tax.
Right.
But it just, it killed everybody out of there, and it's not been raised since then for good reason. And the emissions thing didn't pass because they said, oh, yeah, they fired everybody after they did the wheel tax.
Right.
So I don't think that you should limit locals from being able to say, okay, we don't want flavored cigars sold in Spring Hill city limits.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think, you know, it comes whether it's federal, state, or local. I think the onus should always be on the local government to know what's best for their constituents because they're the ones that are living in the same community.
Well, and also they're the ones that the constituency can affect the most.
Right. They're the ones that you have to see at Walmart on the weekends.
Right. They're the ones you can get voted out.
Yeah.
They're the ones that you can say, I don't like the way he's doing it. I'm going to run against him.
Uh-huh.
So I think I'm kind of with the governor on this. I don't think you should be able. I don't think you should be able to say, oh, yeah, we got this as a state. You can't do nothing locally.
Yeah.
That to me seems anti-American.
Yeah, because the state of Tennessee did the same thing this year with taking over a number of things from the city of Nashville, basically saying, no, we've got this, and just basically saying, we don't care what the citizens want, we're going to tell you how to do it. And it's never a good look politically. I don't understand why people don't realize that, but maybe at the state level, like you say, you just don't have as easy a road to replace somebody, so they get away with it.
I guess that's it. But okay, on to happy news. Semi-happy news. Byron Lounge slotted for the second floor of the Ariston here in Nashville. So the newly remodeled Oasis in the heart of downtown Nashville. Now, this used to be
Blend.
So what has happened is the guys that own Franklin Cigar and Nashville Cigar bought that space, and they've now turned it into a lounge, and it's now going to be a Byron Lounge. And Byron, I don't think I've ever smoked a Byron.
I don't think I have either.
They seem like another one of those radically overpriced cigars. Now, I know guys in here that say they love them, but they all say the same thing, that they're way high priced for what they are.
Yeah. So specifically, the Byron Lounge is going to be the second floor of the Ariston, which is the name of the cigar shop downstairs. So the downstairs area will be basically the same, which is, you know, retail bar and humidor. And then the upstairs, I believe you have to pay a membership for access.
Yeah. And we can go into cigar store memberships on a different day.
Yeah.
The heart of this article we want to get to is, okay, we live in Nashville, folks. don't come to Nashville to visit this Byron Lounge.
Actually, I'm going to go a step further. For whatever you do, do not go to this place. There are very few people in the cigar industry that I will specifically and personally talk bad about. The owner of this shop, Dave Pierce, is one of those people. When he owned Franklin Cigar, which he still does, but when that was his only shop, he treated me so inhumanely and so poorly when I was a rep for Calibri that I swore I would never spend money or step foot in one of his shops again. And to this day, I never have, and I never will. And he and his son-in-law were both operating it at the time. But I will tell you, he is such a garbage person. Do not give this man your money.
Well, and that, I'll say this.
I don't usually go that far on the show.
I'm not going to dig any deeper into that. I don't like him either, and I'm going to let it lay at that. I will say the general manager of Franklin Cigar is so much better an employee than he deserves. He's a great guy. He does great work. The guys that work at Franklin, every one of them I talked to has been really great guys. It's a shame they work for such a terrible boss.
Yeah, and I've known some of the guys that got their start at Franklin or have worked through there. I've got nothing bad to say about them. It's all about Dave.
So when you come to Nashville, since we've never done this before, which we probably should have done it by now.
You would think.
If, you know, Nashville's becoming a big tourist location. We've got all the time, you know, WrestleMania's coming soon. We've got basketball tournaments come every year.
We had the NFL draft a few years ago. Yeah.
You know, so it's becoming. So where to smoke in Nashville becomes the question.
Well, let me point out a little bit. Let me do a quick geography lesson for Nashville. So where we currently record in Spring Hill is about 45 to an minutes to an hour south of Nashville, depending on traffic.
Right.
So we wouldn't consider this a place to go in Nashville.
No.
Nor would we Crown Cigars, which is about 20 minutes closer to town from here, because that's still about 30 minutes away at best. So you're actually fairly limited inside the city limits of where to go and actually have a lounge to sit and smoke and enjoy yourself.
I guess the store that fits the bill the most is Casa de Monte Cristo in Nashville.
Yeah. So
even though it is a corporate store.
Even though it has a corporate store, it's got two things going for it that I think make it the number one destination if you're a visitor to town to smoke. One is that it's in the Gulch, which is kind of a neighborhood right off of downtown. So if you're already in kind of the heart of the city trying to experience that, it's very, you can hop on one of those bird scooters and go from Broadway right up to Casa. It's very, very close. And also their selection is unparalleled, and they have a full bar.
And you don't
have...
That
was three things.
You don't have to worry about coming out of there smelling like a cigar. Their air filtration is top notch.
And I know the GM and a number of the guys that work there very well on a personal level. They know their stuff. They're genuinely good people.
Did you see Hutch retired?
I did not see that.
Yeah, Hutch retired.
Okay.
Well, one of the best guys there, Hutch, he finally retired.
Well, and have Danny a happy just retirement. Moved up to Ohio to be the Crown Heads rep.
Oh, okay.
So, man, well, I got to get back in there and learn all the new faces, I guess.
Well, I know Hutch listens to the podcast. Hutch, congratulations on your retirement. Yeah,
well-deserved.
Well-deserved.
Yes.
We hate that we can't come see you, but we're really happy that you get to do it. But now, also, for something a little different, I think the Abbey's a good choice.
I love the Abbey, as everyone who's listened for any amount of time
Smoker's
knows.
Abbey.
Smoker's Abbey on Gallatin in East Nashville. It's a great pocket neighborhood. It's very hip, a very different vibe to downtown. It's in a great area near some good food. So if you want to kind of make a night of getting outside of the hustle and bustle of downtown, it's great for that. And then I was trying to think of a third.
Well, if you're on the north side of Nashville and you're near Madison, you want to go to the Cigar Club, they're very good.
They're very good.
They don't have a lot of lounge space.
Right. That's the only thing, you know, and that's why I was saying, you know, there used to be one in South Nashville. It's now gone. Really, everything is pushed out to the suburbs, primarily down here. I will say, on the west side of town is a little shop called Belmead Cigars. Now, Ewan just rolls out the red carpet for everybody that walks in that shop. And
Ewan is the owner.
Yeah, sorry. And their selection has... they fit 10 pounds of cigars in a 5-pound humidor.
Yeah, if you're willing to dig through and know what you're looking for or want to find something that you haven't seen in a long time,
this is the place to go. Their prices are incredibly reasonable despite being in one of the highest income per capita neighborhoods in the country.
Yeah, and if you ask Ewan, she knows where it is.
Yeah, and they also happen to be one of the biggest Davidoff accounts in the country. So if you're looking for an exclusive or a limited release Davidoff, there's a good chance they have it or can get it, depending on how long you're going to be here.
So the heart of the matter is don't go to the new Byron Lounge at the Ariston and go to these other shops.
Absolutely.
Go to Casa, go to Belmead, go to the Abbey, and go to those places. Don't fall for the hype of the Byron Lounge in this situation. And well, let's step away for a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about life hacks, and we're going to talk about Zycar for Dummies.
All right, we'll be back with that more after this.
Welcome back to the Cigar Cast. This is one of your hosts, Shane, sitting across from the man who is definitely dressed like a socialist tonight, Mr. Trey.
What?
You did it on purpose, didn't you?
How is this? It's a hoodie.
It is a gray and white drab.
Is that what it is? It's drab.
I just hear that when I see you in that hoodie. I just hear what yours is mine and what mine is mine and we'll worry you till the end of time. You know, I just hear socialist anthems when I see that drab decoration on that shirt.
I have never heard the term dress like a socialist before just a few weeks ago, and now. I couldn't even...
Oh, I thought you did it on purpose. Honestly, in all honesty, I thought he said, tonight I'll show you what a socialist looks like and dressed accordingly. I think you did it on purpose.
If I were going to dress like a socialist, the only thing I could think would be, let's say, skinny jeans, of course. And have you ever seen, they call them the drug rugs? They're the hoodies that look like they're made out of those Mexican blankets.
No, that's hippie. That's not socialist.
No, who do you think the socialists are?
The socialists, like the Russians and the Eastern European bloc, where it's like cloudy all the time and they don't wear color and they all march in step and things like that. I think that may be it. You may not understand what a socialist dressed like.
I don't understand what a socialist dressed like. I didn't realize there was a uniform.
That hoodie definitely is socialist in origin.
But is the guy working tonight the guy who said it?
I'm not saying.
Because we can ask if I'm dressed like
okay.
a socialist.
We'll ask. Hold on. He's walking back here.
Because
now.
I know he was the one working the night you mentioned it. So
okay, so you've tracked it down.
I've tracked it down.
Okay, so I'll have to get his attention, and we'll ask him at some point during this segment of the show.
All right, so in the meantime, let me tell you about the San Latano, the bull.
Okay,
that's what
tell
I'm
me
smoking.
About it.
So, as I mentioned at the top of the show last week, which is when I started the cigar that I just finished, I'm not feeling all that great, so I thought something with a little more nuance, a little less strength would be the ticket. And they ended up not doing me well. So I decided to go the opposite direction this time. So this is the San Latano the Bull. This is a full-bodied cigar from A.J. Fernandez. It's a Sumatran wrapper, so packing a lot of flavor. It's very spicy. It's got just a lot of flavor, really, really punchy. Now, this is also a Nicaraguan Puro, so I'll be interested to see if I continue with the dry palate thing, but... I'm hoping that this kind of kicks the door in where the other one couldn't.
Well, I'm going to lie. A cigar I've picked up in Gatlinburg called the Rocky Patel Disciple. It's a San Andreas wrapper over a Nicaraguan binder and filler. So, should be a flavorful cigar. But like I said, I've had a lot of complaints lately about Rocky and all their cigars tasting the same to me. But I'm coming in this with an open mind. The first cigar I smoked was a pretty mild stick. So I'm looking forward to trying this one and figuring it out if I'm going to like it. I hope I do. Let me just say for the record, for everyone listening, I like Rocky Patel as a company. I like Nish. I like Rocky. I like Heath. Absolutely think the world of Heath. I like Rocky Patel as a company. I want to like their cigars. I want to light this cigar and tomorrow say to Mark, Mark, we got to get the Disciple in. Let's call Rocky Patel.
Okay.
So let me just tell everybody that from the get-go. That's where I want
to like
this.
You want to be wrong.
I do. I want to like this cigar very much. So moving forward, let's talk about the Zycar Perfect XL1.
Let's XI1.
Okay, that too.
Let's talk about the cigar cutter that never needed to be invented.
Hang
time
on a
out,
second.
Time out.
Jake, is he dressed like a socialist?
Right now, yes.
That's a very affirmative hoodie, isn't it?
Well, Trey, typically you are dressed like a socialist. Somewhat stylish socialist, but a socialist. You have nice vests, you have nice shirts, but they're socialists.
They're social. Okay, that's good to know. I didn't realize I was wearing the uniform.
So, if he didn't want to look like a socialist, what should he do?
Dress like Shane, Carhartt.
But then I'd be a schlub.
No, Shane doesn't dress like a schlub. Come on.
Okay. Now I see where
hey, that's gratuity enhancing behavior right there. That's what we
I see where the accusation is coming from, I can take it with a grain of salt. Got it. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's gratuity enhancing behavior right there.
That was smart on his part.
Okay, back to the cutter nobody needed.
Yeah. So When the solid back cutters first came out, I was a fan of them. I thought they were a great idea for kind of helping sort of establish kind of how deep a cut should be, that sort of thing, for people that have a tendency to overcut. But I think we've gone too far.
So to me, like, the Drew Estate was the first ones that really did the cutters with the back in them.
That was the first people I saw do it.
And they did them with their freebies, because they give away so much swag. They did them with their freebies, and I thought it was a brilliant move. Because, like, okay, let's give the guys a cutter they're less likely to destroy their cigar with. Let's idiot-proof it as much as we can.
And it's extra branding on the back of it, because it's solid. I get it. From a freebie and a giveaway standpoint.
But yes, I don't know why. What segment of the people that would buy a Zycar cutter market does a cutter of a back serve to Zycar?
Yeah, so this has an MSRP of $85. If you are to the point in your cigar hobby, career, whatever, that you're ready to drop $85 on a cutter, you should know how to use one without needing training wheels.
Absolutely. I bet if I'm sitting with a guy and he whips out a backed cutter to cut his cigar, I automatically assume he's a newbie.
Right.
Now, I carry a cigar cutter with a back in it because I do have people all the times ask me, hey, Shane, you got a cutter I can borrow?
You know, the cutter that stays in my car is a backed cutter. And I very rarely, if almost never, smoke Torpedo, so it's fine. But it's because it was a freebie that I got, and so it's just kind of, I don't ever care what happens to it. I hardly ever use it. So, yeah, okay, I own and occasionally use those. But, yeah, taking the step to buy one, I think, is a bridge too far. And I don't actually... If you prefer the solid back cutter, that's fine. I'm not actually talking about, but it's if we're going to continue to market products to people who haven't had the opportunity to build up the skill, is the same to me as selling bicycles with built-in training wheels you can never remove. Like, I feel like we should be encouraging people to develop the skill.
And I feel like people should want to develop the skill. I feel like this cigar cutter should be a failure for the sake of cigar guys. I think cigar guys should look at this and say, no, I'm not buying this. I really feel like that's the way this should go.
Yeah.
And all, it's not an attractive cutter. I mean, it's this classic teardrop Zycar shape. But I would feel like I did not...
I would feel like getting a rental car detailed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, okay, how lazy am I going to be that I'm going to just stick it in there and whack it off and be done with it?
Well.
I mean, that's just... I'm absolutely against this Zycar cutter. So, speaking of wastes of time. So, I had him sitting in here last night. Walked in, sat down. Guy I hadn't seen in a couple of weeks was in here. And he said, hey, how's planned business going? I said, it's awesome. I've got plenty of work. It beats having a real job. You know, same thing I tell everybody.
Right.
And he said, I may need your services. I said, okay, what are you thinking? He said, well, I'm thinking I'm going to build a container house.
And you said, I'm out.
I said, I'm out. I said, absolutely, I'm out. And he said, why? I said, because it's silly. It's illogical. I said, so, if you want to go down this rabbit hole with me, and I'm not going to take us far down this rabbit hole, but I'll just say one thing. The container house, the containers are, what, 12-foot wide max?
Right.
And you've got to frame walls inside that. So, you got the widest any room in your house is going to be is 11 foot?
Yeah, exactly.
That's foolish. And as you stated last week, containers tend to leak.
Yeah,
they can get damaged.
Yeah, by and large, they're one-use items. You know, most because it's cheaper to build one, ship it across the world, and just leave it there to rust and rot than to have it shipped back empty. So they were only ever designed for one-time use anyway.
And I said, well, the next thing you're going to want is a barn dominium. He said, well, I looked at that. I said, yes, those are not. I said, why do people keep wanting to take what should be one of the most important parts of their financial portfolio, their home? You know, it drives me nuts to walk through the apartment complex next to my house and see new cars.
Right.
So we're going to spend a lot of money on a rapidly depreciating item while we're renting. You know, get your priorities straight, people. Life ain't that hard. Life is really not hard. Make good decisions. When you don't do it again. It's pretty simple. I mean, it's just not that hard. But people tend to, they get set on these stupid decisions. And I blame the term hack.
You think that's the crux of all of this?
I think people say, I'm going to hack the system. And I'm going to be smarter than everybody else. And I'm going to build a barn dominium. Or I'm going to build a container house. Or I'm going to build my house out of Legos and fill them full of concrete or something like that.
Well, a tiny house started as
tiny
the
house.
Same.
Yeah. Hack.
Yeah.
You know, the reason we do things the way we do is because it works every time. And if it works every time, it doesn't need changing.
I think, going back to the house thing, I think the biggest issue that we see there, and you're going to disagree with me, and I know that, and I'm fine with it, so just don't even bother. But...
So don't give my years and years of experience on one of the four things I know a lot about.
Okay, yeah, gotcha. Yeah. Well, because I already know.
But you're not the only one listening to me.
Yeah,
you and two other guys.
Think, yes, I am. for 7 years, I'm the only guy listening to you. The biggest thing with real estate is the barrier to entry. Right. Once you buy your first house, buying your second house is a whole lot easier than buying your first one. And so I think where a lot of this comes from is people see the barn dough, the container home, as an inexpensive way to break through that. Now, there are plenty of pitfalls that go with it. And that's why I said
it doesn't work being the main one.
Yes. Shut up. I told you. But that's the logic that I think people use that allows them to, okay, well, I'm going to buy the land, so at least I have some asset associated with it, and then I'll just put up the ricketiest, quickest, cheapest shelter I can, because then at least I'm in the club. Yes, there are plenty of downsides to it, but I think that's where it comes from.
Well, here's the deal. Your first house is not going to be conveniently located. You're not going to live in the hottest part of town, in the best part of town, in the nicest neighborhoods. None of that for your first house. That's why it's your first house.
Right.
The problem people have is they have this fantasy that every house they move into is going to be the last house they ever own.
Yeah. Or that it's going to be the perfect house.
Right. It's a stepping stone. Start out, move out a little bit, drive a few extra minutes to work every day, drive a little further to get to the grocery store, but you have a house. Then as that accrues value, you can move up. You can work your way up, but go through the process. Don't think you're entitled
There's
to start
no
out at the top.
Too many people have made too much money in this industry for there to be any shortcuts that really work.
Well, yeah, and that being said, we did this article from pocketlint.com.
Where did you find pocketlint.com?
I typed in the dumb life hacks.
Oh, okay. So this came...
30 hilariously terrible life hacks that we wouldn't recommend using.
Now, some of these are intentionally tongue-in-cheek. I don't think anybody really thinks putting a spoiler on your PC is going to make it faster.
Yeah, but that one's cute.
It is.
I mean, that one is cute that we'll make the PC faster by putting a spoiler on it. I did think that was a cute idea.
Yeah.
Okay, that wasn't potentially fatal. Some of these hacks are very potentially fatal.
Yes.
And let's categorize them. Let's just hit the automobile related ones.
All right.
Okay, folks. You're going to hear me say this a couple of times during this segment. You're not as funny as you think they are.
Yeah.
The guy that's got a dent in his car and he just put a sign on it that said Powell, like the 1950s Batman show.
I've also seen, 60s, I've also seen where they'll put like a kid with a baseball bat or like some other, where it's like a decal next to it, a Street Fighter. With a punch extended, stuff like that. It was funny the first time I saw it 20 years ago. And it stopped being funny immediately thereafter.
Right. 19 years, 355 days and 30 seconds later.
Exactly.
And here's the thing. If I'm interviewing someone for a job and they show up with, the big dent in the hood of their car and instead of fixing it, they've decided to draw over it, I'm probably not hiring them.
Or even just leave it alone. Yeah, there are plenty
of
reasons.
Or just have the dent.
Yeah, just have the dent. Don't draw extra attention to it.
Yeah, just have the dent and say to me when I say, hey, what happened to your car? Oh, yeah, I got dented. That's why I'm here talking to you about a job. I'd like to have enough money to fix my car.
Yeah.
Go that way with it.
Well, because it's one thing, you're driving around the road, you see the guy driving like an idiot, and you see a couple of dents in his car, you go, okay, watch out for that guy, because he clearly can't learn a lesson. But then if that guy has then taken the word pow and painted over the dent, not only has he not learned the lesson, he's so self-aware that he knows he's just going to continue wreaking havoc that he's even more of a liability.
Yeah.
Right.
DIY air conditioning. Okay, first and foremost, one of the most overused dumb items in society is the window air conditioner.
I agree with that.
And I've seen $400,000 houses where they put a window air conditioner in the bonus room directly over the garage. And we've had to send letters from the HOA. Dear sir, you cannot have this window air conditioner hanging out of the front of your house. Please go back to the trailer park from whence you came.
Right. We actually had that issue in our neighborhood where it was a front-facing window, and the guy had strictly in our bylaws, you can't do that. Although I actually did like his response, which is, I am still a year later awaiting the warranty repair from the builder. As soon as he gets off his duff and comes and fixes it, I will remove it.
Hey,
absolutely.
That's between you and the builder. That should not impact my property values.
Well,
get off your butt and get a lawyer and get the builder to do it if you think you've got a case. But don't make your problem my problem.
Well, the problem is the HOA is owned and managed by the builder.
But it's still making his problem my problem. It's still a greedy, selfish move. No.
How much is that? How much is one house in the neighborhood really affecting my property values, though?
If it looks like a trailer park, it's going to affect your property value. Right. But anyway, this automotive one, they actually have an air conditioner hanging out of the back window. It looks like a late model Buick of some sort.
Or Crown Vic, maybe. Although I do like the fact that the rims on this particular vehicle cost more than the window unit.
And possibly the car.
Yeah, probably so.
Wipers are expensive. Somebody's actually put an oven mitt over the wiper on the back of their car.
Which anyone who's ever used an oven mitt to try and move water knows that that's just a terrible idea.
Yeah, and not only that, anybody who's tried to use the little wiper on the back of their car knows they're not that good.
Yeah, that mine came from the factory completely useless.
Yeah, they're just all they're good for. The other one we'll move on from automotive is the printed headlight. This person knocked their headlight out and they just printed a picture of one and stuck it in there.
I guess hoping the cop is not going to notice the light not coming out of it.
Hoping that they have encountered the dumbest cop in the history of police. Derek, just throw that over here. The dumbest cop in the history of policemen. And that he's going to say, oh, you got me.
Well, it's the same guy who thinks he's about to encounter the dumbest parking attendant that has ever existed. Avoid parking tickets by raising your windshield wipers.
Now, and I guarantee you this guy is in here right now. I guarantee you we could find one of these type guys in here right now because the cigar shops are full of them.
Oh, yeah.
They can't touch your windshield wipers if you've got them up.
Right, yeah. They're not allowed to modify.
They're not allowed to modify the vehicle and touch your windshield. I guarantee you that guy's in here somewhere.
Yeah.
I bet you we wouldn't have to poll of the 20 people in here. I think we poll 10 of them before we find that guy.
Although the one guy I could guarantee would say that is not here tonight.
He's not here tonight. Well, that's a slow pitch.
Yeah.
And okay, moving out of the automotive foolish life hacks. Let's get to do you want to go to the kitchen or do you want to go to the household?
Let's just do household in general.
Household in general. So which one stood out to you? Because I got two good contenders here.
The one that really stood out to me was the makeshift shower head because, of course, it's a Mountain Dew bottle that someone has just drilled a bunch of holes. Look. And it's even got a custom adapter to screw it on, right? So somebody has gone to Home Depot and walked past the aisle where you can buy a shower head for $14 plus a 98-cent roll of Teflon tape and have decided, no, I'm just going to get a flange so that I can use my Mountain Dew empties.
Okay. By the way, side note. How many rolls of Teflon tape does the average DIYer own? I think I own 387.
I was going to say somewhere in that neighborhood.
Here's the thing about Teflon tape. You never know how much of it you have left.
Right. Or where you put it the last time you used it.
Right. You never know if you can find it, and you never know how much of it you're going to have left. It's completely ineffable that you could look at a roll of Teflon tape and know if there's 6 inches or 6 foot on that roll of tape. Right.
I don't even know how much comes on a roll of Teflon tape. I assume it's 2 feet because that's the most I've ever taken off of one. Because it gets twisted, you have to break it. It gets twisted again, you break. Okay, now I've got the 6 inches I need to use. But, yeah, it's 97 cents. I'm buying a new roll every time I have a project that needs it.
Every time I buy a shower head, I buy a train or drain,
yeah,
a dishwasher, whatever, I just go ahead and pick up and throw a roll of Teflon tape in there.
Yep.
Matter of fact, they should all just come with a roll of Teflon tape.
A lot of them do.
Yeah, but usually it's like 2.5 inches.
Right.
They usually scale out exactly how much Teflon tape you may need.
Right.
If you were a professional plumber and had done this 2,000 times, you could do it in 2 inches of Teflon tape, and that's how much they give you. Yeah.
Which I think I'm almost at that point. You know, I lived in a lot of apartments over the course of my early adulthood, and one of the first things I would do was replace the shower head. And I would put the old one under the sink and I'd replace it when I left. But I have replaced no less than 20 shower heads in my day.
The okay, I'm not even going to justify the make eggs delicious where they make a chocolate cake. To me, that's just stupid.
That's just stupid.
That's just somebody. I do like the DIY lights. When your kids grow out of their toys, don't throw them away. They can be repurposed. How many nightmares do you... So, your child is going to be talking about this in therapy later in life.
For those playing the home game, it's a porcelain doll head on a Victorian lamp base. And so the light is just coming out of the mouth and eye holes, glowing like the spawn of Satan himself.
Yeah. I mean, let's nightmare just scar floor. As if we don't scar our children enough on accident.
The makeshift whisk, I guarantee you someone has tried this.
I guarantee you somebody has tried this. So basically, it's a DeWalt drill, and they've put an egg whisk on the end of it. It looks like a 22-volter.
Yeah. So, a couple of problems with this. A, that whisk was never meant for that level of RPM. Those bales are way too weak. Go to Goodwill. Buy a hand mixer. It'll cost you $6, and you'll use it way more than you think.
Or buy new. Some items I like to buy new. I'll buy my hand whiskers for new.
No,
they can't be much more than $6 new.
Probably not.
I mean, what?
I haven't bought a hand mixer in a long time.
Well, not only that, this RPM, assuming this works, assuming yeah. you've got the one whisk that's rated for 2,300 RPM.
Right.
You're going to sling pancake batter all
everywhere.
But now the upside is you put it in reverse and it'll pull it back in.
Oh, that's right. Only if you've got enough gluten that it all sticks together.
Yeah, that it all sticks back together. Again, here again, we have another variation on the printed sign, the Here's Johnny, where he's got a hole in the door, and he just taped a picture of Jack Nicholson to it. Dude, you're not as funny as you think you are.
The one I do like that this reminds me of, it's not on this list, is a kid drew on the wall with crayon, like a little, you know, square and triangle house with smoke coming out of the chimney, and the guy just put a frame around it and then put a little tag next to it like you see at a museum that had the artist name, you know, wax on plaster, you know.
Right.
I thought that was cute.
That is. That's got a little class to it. Okay, the other one on here that I want to be sure we hit, avoid burglary. So if you buy a new TV, they say to put the box next to your neighbor's garbage can.
I think that actually might be illegal.
Think so?
I know going through your neighbor's trash is illegal.
Is it illegal to go through your neighbor's trash?
Yes, it is. So
I don't know why you'd want to, but yes, I suppose I could see why that would be illegal.
That may differ based on region and other things, but I know in some places it is. But I love the idea that if you're in a neighborhood where you're buying a 55-inch TV is a threat.
Is going to invite burglary. You probably got bigger problems.
You probably got bigger problems.
Well, and, you know, okay, I don't have any trouble with putting the sign in my front yard that says my neighbor voted for gun rights or for gun cancellation or whatever. I don't mind establishing that of the neighbors in this neighborhood, I'm the one that owns a gun.
Right.
I think I would just make a sign that says, just before you enter, know a gun lives here and a man who's willing to use it.
Beware of dog licks and 9mm.
That's right. And I do love the that little welcome mat they had. Said, due to the price of ammunition, we can no longer extend the courtesy of a warning shot.
Yeah.
So I do think those things work out. But I think this is a bad idea. Now, I'm not going to justify a lot of their cell phone stuff because, to me, that's too modern a deal. Use your seatbelt to open beer bottles.
That's one of those things that I'm sure it would work.
I'm certain it works, except for the part
where you're drinking in the car.
Where you're in the car and need to pop your beer bottle.
Right.
And, okay, let's face it. Anybody serious enough about drinking that they're drinking one in the car, they've got an opener on them.
Exactly.
And have you seen the little flip-flops of the beer opener built in the bottom of it?
I have, or the belt buckle that has one.
During your days of wild drinking, what
I
was
I had one built into my wallet, thank you very much.
Oh, you had the bottle opener built into the wallet.
Yes.
Did you refer to it as the church key?
No, because a church key is a very specific type of it. Not just every bottle opener is a church key.
Well, I assume when somebody has a bottle opener and they say, "Do you have the church key?" that they're actually equating it with the key to the church and that they should probably go to a meeting.
I've never put those two things together.
That's definitely the way I assume that works. But anyway, all right, let's hit one more cigar before we call it a night. Cro-Magnon Clovis, slated for April.
So, Roma Craft, as everyone knows, I'm a huge fan of. They're updating the Cro-Magnon line by adding this. And it was originally the Black Irish, I think I read somewhere. Like the Black Irish, it's a version of the 5x56 with a barber pole wrapper design that uses Ecuadorian Candela tobacco as an accent. So, the internal blend is the same as the regular Cro-Magnon, but it's got that barber pole with the Candela added.
Nobody likes working with Roma Craft. You know, any cigar company, you'll hear somebody talking about them, and you'll say, "Man, we just cannot work." And they'll say, "Oh, yeah, they do great for us. They work with us fine. They're a great cigar company. Great guys." I have never met a person that enjoyed working with the people at Roma Craft.
Really? I've not heard that.
And I've been around the shows, been around the business, been around different shops. I've never heard a shop said, "Oh yeah, those guys at Roma Craft are a pleasure to deal with."
That's funny. I've not heard one way or the other, I should say. So
yeah, I've never heard anything good about them. So I'm not sure about it, but I don't know. I think, has Roma Craft fallen off, or is it just that I'm in a smaller structure? Are they still selling big when you're abroad?
Abroad.
Abroad being out of Spring Hill. Anything out of Spring Hill is abroad. Since they built a cigar shop in Spring Hill, my home range has decreased greatly.
I was speaking to that effect just last night, actually. So I don't see them as much as I used to. But, you know, the shop that I used to see them the most at was at our old shop. And they're just not keeping them on the shelves as much. The only other place I know is the Abbey and Belmead. Those are the two places I know I can find them. And I just don't go to those shops as much as I used to.
Do you ever have the urge for one? Do you ever wake up in the morning and say, "Boy, I want a Neanderthal today"?
Sometimes, yeah. The Intemperance is really my favorite in their line.
I don't think I ever have had the urge for a Roma Craft.
Robbie gets them in from time to time, and so occasionally I still get the opportunity, but not as much as I used to.
To me, they're a little bland.
My problem is they don't make a Toro.
Right.
They do in the regular Cro-Magnon and the Neanderthal, and the Aquitaine, but they don't in the Intemperance line, and I really wish they did.
Well, as we wrap up the show, I guess I've got to talk about the Disciple. It's just like all the other Rockies. This is just a Rocky with a San Andreas wrapper and not a great San Andreas wrapper. I mean, I'd give it a 4, maybe a 5 on a good day.
Oh, man, that stinks.
I wanted to like it. I tried to like it. It's just not that good. It's just a cigar.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. It's not offensive. I'm not going to throw it away when we turn off the mics, but
it's not
great.
You got a bit of tunneling happening, too.
It's got a little tunneling going on, got a little crooked burning going on. It's just kind of...
Yeah.
I wish it had been better.
Well, that's a shame. My San Latano the Bull, I should have taken this approach when I first came in here. It's just go strong, blunt force the congestion away. It's giving me what I want. Now, it's not giving me what I normally get out of it, but it's... It's really good. It's a 6.
Awesome. Well, how do they get a hold of us, Trey?
You can reach us at facebook.com/thecigarcast or at Instagram and Twitter @thecigarcast and email info@thecigarcast.com.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening this week. Until next week, have a great week. Until next week, have a great cigar and think well of us.